This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's hour number three. Thanks for joining us. We've got the top five, bottom five coming this up. I almost said good, the bad, and the dumb. Why would we want part two when the first one was so good? We got top five, bottom five after week two of the National Football League. And also Nick Ferguson's going to join us. Former Broncos safety. He's also co-host on The Fan out in Denver, 104.3. Nick and Cecil. So we'll get his thoughts on the Broncos, who are off to a 2-0 start. And while they have not beaten world beaters again, Giants and Jacksonville, they've won two games on the road. Teddy Bridgewater looks like he was the right choice. The defense is fantastic. You're talking about a team, you know, that with an extra wild card, and I keep throwing that in there, could they be a playoff team? And what is it like in Denver the last couple of years with John Elway and his inability to get a quarterback after Peyton Manning? I mean, again, you would like to criticize any other person, but a guy that won you a couple of Super Bowls and has been the prince of football in that region for close to 40 years, how do you do that? I mean, how do you lay sort of blame on a guy that has given the area so much? We'll talk to Nick Ferguson coming up about that. The Major League Baseball playoffs are in the final 2 weeks of the post regular season, the final 2 weeks before we get to the playoffs. Right now, as it stands, the New York Yankees would not be in the postseason. The two wild card teams in the American League would be Toronto and Boston, and the Yankees would be on the outside looking in. Now, this comes as we've got a new playoff format where there is going to be an extra wild card team, but the Yankees would not be in there. Right now, a half game out of Toronto for that spot. In the National League, right now, it's the Dodgers and the St. Louis Cardinals, with Cincinnati trying to make hay. There's one team that's getting a lot of attention lately, and that is the Philadelphia Phillies. Bryce Harper is putting up some fantastic numbers. They are right on the edge of Atlanta in the NL East. They're only three games back with 2 weeks to play for the National League East. Now, maybe the Phillies' only way of getting into the postseason would be to win the division. But Bryce Harper is getting some MVP consideration. He's batting .311. He's got 33 home runs. He's driven in 80 runs already this season. So watch out for the Phillies. I know a lot of people have not been paying attention to them, but they have a chance to win the NL East to make the postseason. All right, top five, bottom five coming up next on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Kane is in the building.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it's time for top five, bottom five. We do this on Tuesdays. Last year, remember how fun it was last year when we did them on Wednesdays and Thursdays, whenever the week would wrap up due to COVID?
Good times.
Those were good times, weren't they?
There was a moment where I think we did it on a Friday, and it was like, you know.
Then we did the preview.
It's like, well, don't include the Thursday night game because we're doing the Friday, and then we're going to preview what to watch this weekend based on the rankings we just gave you.
Yeah, it was fun. It was so crazy last year. But we do them every Tuesday. We give you the top five, bottom five of the NFL and the once Monday Night Football is over. So let's get started as we go 5-1 in our top five. And then the bottom five next segment is a lot more fun.
Yes.
Because we get to pick on teams. But number five on my list is where I put Arizona off to a 2-0 start. I thought their win against Tennessee in week one was fantastic. They looked great. Now, maybe it wasn't the best game against Minnesota and they won it on a missed field goal, but they are still 2-0 and Kyler Murray is great. Now, he made some errors in this game against the Vikings, but nevertheless, Arizona, a sleeper team that I was wondering about this season, is not disappointing so far, so they're fifth on my list.
You know, I had Arizona in my top five, my top five last week. I actually dropped them out this week, not because of anything that they've done, except, you know, taken to the brink of a loss with the Vikings. They were a field goal away.
Right.
I mean, they're like 5B on my list, so I'm right there with you. But at number five for me, this is where I put the Baltimore Ravens.
Oh, nice.
Because, let's face it, I mean, they played a really, really tight game with the Raiders. Almost won that game. Then they pulled out a win against the Chiefs. So, I mean, this team literally could be 2-0 right now had the ball bounced the right way for them.
Yeah, four. That's where I put Kansas City.
At number four.
I still like them. I still think they're the standard bearer in the AFC. I didn't like how they lost. I didn't like the fact that they gave up two touchdowns in the fourth quarter in this one. But I still think they're a threat. And I think, you know, they came back in their game against Cleveland at home. And this one was one that got away from them. But I still think when you think AFC, you still think Kansas City. I don't know how long I'll put them there if they lose another one. But right now, I put them at fourth.
Yeah, I have them somewhere a little bit higher.
Still. Okay.
But I'm with you. I think the road leads through Arrowhead. Number four for me, this is where I had the Rams.
Rams. Oh, man, I didn't even put the Rams in.
I'm impressed with the defense. I'm impressed with what Stafford is doing, although it was a little bit closer this week than the last week. This is slowly becoming looking like a juggernaut team to be dealt with.
And boy, Stafford and Cooper Kupp are working great together.
Yeah, how much did Cooper Kupp had? He had all the receiving yards.
He had 160 plus with two touchdowns.
All of them, yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
He was all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun dynamic duo.
So let's go. We're going to number three.
Number three.
All right, three. This is where I put San Francisco. I've been paying attention to San Francisco because my friend Frank Schwab told Matt Perrault he thought San Francisco would go to the Super Bowl. I don't know about that, but then I started seeing them, and I was like, you know, this is a really good football team. They're going to play Green Bay in week three. I think it's the game of the weekend. But the defense is really stepping up. I just think they're playing great. Now I've got San Francisco at three.
Yeah, this is another one where I guess I'll put them at 5C. I left them off the top table, but that was another one I kept going back and forth with. I mean, that NFC West is no joke.
No, it isn't.
It's not. It's looking really scary.
I mean, Seattle could have been an easy two. All of them could have been 2-0 with Seattle overtime loss to Tennessee.
Yeah. I mean, you get four teams that are 2-0 in the same division. I don't know. But I just left the Niners off. At number three, this one pains me. It really, really does. But I got to give them credit where credit is due. And this is where I have the Raiders.
Ah, yes. Okay.
I don't know what to say. I didn't really think much of them before the season began because I didn't really, you know, I felt like there was quarterback issues. I felt there was running back issues. I felt there was just issues all across the board. But they put together two solid game plans so far.
Yeah.
You can't argue what they're doing right now. I mean, they beat the Ravens week one. They beat the Steelers. They bested the Steelers in week two. They're number three this week.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I have them two on my list. And it's everything to do with who they've beaten. They beat the Ravens and the Steelers. These are two playoff teams. These are two teams from last year's playoffs. These are two teams that played well enough in their week one wins. At least like in their week two wins, you know, with Baltimore lost and then, you know what I mean? They in their wins looked impressive, right? That's what I mean by it. The Steelers defense, I know it was without TJ Watt and that really hurt them, but that was a team that really shoved it down Buffalo's throat and Vegas tore it up. And again, I know it was injured, no Devin Bush, no TJ Watt, but defensively they did a very good job too on keeping things in check for Roethlisberger and the Steelers. The comeback was crazy. It's the wildest Monday night finish. But right now, we're not in a position to really evaluate a lot. So what we have to do is go by what we're seeing. Derek Carr is playing like an MVP.
He
and that's
is.
Why I have him as two.
What he has, like nine touchdowns through two games?
It may take one loss for them to be out of my top five completely. You know what
Obviously,
I mean? But
yeah.
right now, they're playing really good.
Man, listen, I hate doing this.
Yeah, I agree.
That's like you having to put the Browns somewhere in the top five or the Ravens. You're like, oh, God, I just can't do it, but you got to. Number two, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking too much of last year, but number two is where I have the Chiefs. I'm sorry, I'm playing that game that, if I put the Chiefs against any of these teams, who do I think is going to win?
I agree completely.
And I think the Chiefs will win.
Like, that's the thing.
If the season's on the line type deal.
That's the thing, right? I mean, the way they came back against the Browns in week one, you're reminded how good this team is. You cannot shut them down, right? You think you're in cruise control, but you're never in cruise control. They'll score in 10 seconds if they have to. They'll score two touchdowns in a minute and a half if they have to. And yeah, the loss to Baltimore takes him down a little bit, but I didn't take him down that much. I see where you're going. I got it. I put them in
I
my...
I probably should have done the same thing with you. I was like, penalize them this week.
Right.
But they'll be right back. They're never going to get out of the top five.
No,
let's be real.
No. And, you know, they got to lose a bunch and look bad doing it.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to fault them going on the road to lose to Baltimore on the road, especially a close game like that. I just think when they're on, they are the best team in the AFC, without a question. And that's not, you know, everyone would say that. So it's not being like, you know, that's not a bold, hot take.
And is your number one obvious as well?
Yeah, with 9 touchdown passes, baby. I mean, my goodness. You know what Bruce Arians should do? He should just go, what's it going to take to get him the record? Let's just go for the record. And we're going to call all the plays we're going to call are based on him throwing the ball in the end zone and getting touchdown passes. Let's just pile them up for the 44-year-old quarterback so we can own this one. And Peyton Manning can't come out of retirement to get it in a 17-game schedule.
And neither can Drew Brees. It's absolutely ridiculous what we're watching right now.
Doing it with relative ease. I know, you know. And look, and even though there was a tight game against the Cowboys, he still looked magnificent doing it. And the Cowboys look good. Atlanta, different story, I understand. But still, 5 touchdowns, come on. That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah, I'm trying to find this tweet because it was brilliantly put. It was Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus had tweeted out that, you know, the NFL is in good hands with these young quarterbacks for the next decade. And it shows, like, you know, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Lamar Jackson, and Tom Brady.
Yeah. I know. Oh.
Because, I mean, I don't – what is he drinking? What is he eating?
What's he doing, man?
What really is in the TB12 method? Because this is ridiculous.
You know what's funny about this? We've got a few minutes here. You remember back in the late 80s, Todd Marinovich
and
his dad, remember? I remember reading the Sports Illustrated article about Marv Marinovich. Todd didn't have sugar, no Big Macs, no fast food, no nothing, right? Special, like, birthday cake when he would go to parties as a kid because Marv believed in diet and all stuff. And then Todd obviously went off, was a drug addict and had problems with substance abuse. But it does make you think, like, whatever, you know, you'll never out-exercise a bad diet, right? Diet is that for, you want to stay in, you want to be in shape, you want to be healthy, diet first. Like the people who go, oh, I'll eat what I want and exercise, it doesn't work that way. Tom Brady has found something in the way he consumes food because he, at 44, I can't imagine he doesn't have the same aches and pains as other people at 40 years old.
Exactly. Yeah.
That have played in this league, that have been in this league. Forget coal miners and people who like really do hard labor. I mean, a guy that gets knocked down, beat up, goes, you know, gets hit by a truck every time somebody tackles him. At 44, he doesn't wake up screaming in agonizing pain that he can't get out of bed because his knees won't bend. Like, what? That's amazing to me.
I know he doesn't. He rarely scrambles, but he can. I mean, he can get away from the pocket, right. But I mean, he's so precise in what he does. I guess maybe he doesn't get hit as often as we think, like what most quarterbacks do. I don't know. I'm at a loss right now.
I think he does. Because I mean, look, whatever the normal, like if you take an average quarterback in his career, he's played 20 plus years. So like an average quarterback career might be 10 years. He's had 20 years of getting hit and hit over and over again. And yeah, maybe it doesn't go down as much, but you can't tell me over the life of 20, 21 years that he hasn't had his share of injuries. I mean, his share of bumps and bruises along the way. He just, whatever he's drinking or whatever he's eating, how he's eating, how his meals are prepared. God bless him. That's great. Meanwhile, I'm woofing down a Fudgy the Whale cake for dinner. I mean, my goodness.
Of course.
You know?
Why shouldn't we?
Why shouldn't I? All right, bottom 5 coming up next as we continue on Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver Here's Tony D.
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows when it's time to replace your wiper blades. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. The professional parts people will help you navigate their wide selection to find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will even install the wiper blades free of charge. See better, drive safer with new wiper blades at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, see better, drive better prices every day. All right, we're getting to the bottom five now. This is where we have a lot of fun. We go top 10 list of the worst teams. Let's get started. We go to 28 all the way to 32. 28 on my list, the New York Football Giants. Now, Daniel Jones played pretty good Thursday night. He did. He played pretty good. And they almost won that game. But they didn't win that game. And do you know why they didn't win that game? Because they went off sides on a 48-yard field goal. They went off sides on a field goal they should just let the kicker try to make. And for that reason, and that reason alone, one guy, I'm putting you in my bottom five, New York Giants. Go win a football game. You'll get out of this. But lose more, we may keep you here on Tuesdays. Giants are my number 28 team.
Number 28 for me?
Yeah.
The New York Football Giants.
All right.
Everything you just said, all I want to do right now is just be Patrick Swayze and go ditto.
Yeah, right.
Basically.
Sorry.
And I'll just add one more thing. You need to kind of, it's time to take the kid gloves off of Saquon Barkley.
I do too.
Yeah. See what you got. See what he can do.
Yeah, roll on.
Carries that, has he even received like 15 carries in a game yet? 20 carries?
I don't think he has.
No. I mean, you got to see how that knee's doing. You got to, maybe, I have a hard time believing, because what, he did it like in week two last year? Right?
Right,
hurt his knee in like week two or week three? I mean, it's been a full year, and I know that the process takes a while, and everybody's body heals differently, but I don't remember really hearing any setbacks that he's had.
No.
You know, and so then I don't like doing this, but I do compare him to Adrian Peterson, because this is, Saquon Barkley is another dynamic back. Adrian Peterson was ready to go and, ran great. I just feel like, maybe, I don't know if it's Saquon Barkley or the Giants are just afraid to use him because they know they don't have an offensive line.
Yeah. And I think they did play pretty well.
They didn't play terrible.
But they didn't play terrible.
But they didn't play enough.
You got to stay there. Especially you go off sides. 29 team that played last night. I'm going to put Detroit here.
Okay.
I'm not mad at Detroit. I said it in hour one. I thought they played as good as they could have played in the first half of that game. They played pretty good against San Francisco and coming back. But they're 0-2, and they're still making mistakes, and they're still doing some things that are preventing them from getting over the hump. They are a rebuilding team. They are still trying to win games. They haven't yet. I'm not going to punish them. This could be a bad, bad team down the road, but I think Dan Campbell has them fighting. Still, though, I put him at 29.
29 for me, this is where I put the Texans.
Texans, okay.
Now, listen, they beat a Jaguars team that featured a rookie quarterback, and they looked pretty decent doing it. They got bested by the Browns, and I don't care if Tyrod Taylor was able to finish the game. The Browns were still going to beat them. Where I'm coming from now is, if you want to go back and listen to what we were talking about in hour two about the Texans,
right,
it's kind of where I have why I have these guys in the bottom five. They have could have been a Hall of Fame quarterback who literally is just sitting on the bench. Not even on the bench.
They don't even want to bring him on board to help.
Again, I don't know if he's allowed in the stadium, if he's allowed in NRG Stadium. And if he is allowed in NRG Stadium, did he have to buy his own ticket?
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's the only way Deshaun Watson is seeing the Texans play football on a Sunday live right now. And now your starting quarterback, Tyrod Taylor, who you brought in as just an insurance piece, is injured, and now the guy that you drafted is your new starting quarterback, and you're making your practice squad quarterback the clipboard holder, the second string, just in case Davis Mills gets hurt.
It's insane to me.
Insane.
I just don't get it.
And so this is more...
I shouldn't say I don't get it. I get if you want to protect him, but give your first priority should be trying to win football games.
Yeah.
Not trying to... Because everybody can save players they want to trade, But you gotta try to win football games. You owe it to everyone within the organization that's busting their tail. And it's not just the players, it's everybody in the front office that's trying to do their best to sell sponsorships and tickets and all of those things. Your job is to put a winning product out as best you possibly can. Doesn't always work, but the best you possibly can. And they're not doing that when they go, let's go find somebody else off the practice squad rather than a Pro Bowl quarterback who's healthy.
Right.
Like, it's crazy to me.
And that's why this ranking of them being at 29, I'm not going to say it's a team thing. It's an organizational thing.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's where I'm putting them, 29.
All right. 30 for me is the Atlanta Falcons. These are two double-digit losses. Looked a little better against Tampa Bay, but it's Tampa Bay. What are they going to do? But Arthur Smith's struggling a little bit. He doesn't have an offensive flow. I don't think they should have gone after a quarterback. I think Kyle Pitts will be fine. I don't think any of that stuff. But I'm a little surprised. I thought Arthur Smith would put a little pop into this offense with Calvin Ridley, Kyle Pitts, Matt Ryan. But they're not good offensively. We know defensively they'd struggle a little bit too. But Atlanta is not a good team. I'm putting them at 30.
At number 30, this is where I had the Jaguars.
Jaguars, okay.
I'm keeping them at 30, although they have not really shown anything. They haven't shown any promise yet. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt because they have a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback.
All right.
And that's literally the only thing.
I mean,
they haven't been completely out of games. They've shown some promise. I mean, they haven't really been in any game either. But I'm just saying they haven't, at least they're putting points up on the board.
Yeah, I got them coming down the line, but I like where you're going. Like you're not punishing them as much.
I'm not punishing them as much.
Because they are what they are.
Yeah.
Exactly. 31 for me, this is where I have Jacksonville. I'm with you a little bit. I mean, you give them a little bit more. I'm with you on the idea. Why are people losing their minds over Jacksonville? This is a thing I've been making over and over again. Why are people like, oh my God, Urban Meyer, he's going to quit. He can't stay. He knew what he was getting. Everybody knew what he was getting into. Unless he has the ego, the size, which he probably does.
Of course.
The size of the state, thinking he could change it overnight. But most reasonable football people knew what that cupboard was when they would have gotten there. I think he knew what the cupboard was when he got there. He didn't make a ton of changes because those changes are going to come later. But this is exactly what I expected from Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer in their first year. You're going to lose some games. Lose games. And that's what they're doing.
Yeah, no, you're going to lose. You got to take your licks. Listen, Jimmy Johnson went, 1-15?
Yeah,
that's
right.
Troy Aikman. And then, they still weren't that great, but they started, you could see the pieces started to move around for them. And that's exactly how I feel about this team right now, is the Jaguars, is that, maybe they, they need to get some defensive players, which seems kind of funny to say about them. Number 31 for me, this is where I put the Falcons.
Falcons, okay.
Yeah, I mean,
punish that team.
For all the same reasons that, you had. I mean, Matt Ryan might be showing his age a little bit. I don't think they have it all quite figured out. And they need to figure out an offensive line for him.
Yeah.
They have the weapons in place. They just, I don't know. And Arthur Smith, I mean, right now, I mean, given the two, if I had to choose a coach, I think I would choose Urban Meyer over Arthur Smith at this point.
Yeah, Arthur Smith's been very disappointing, and he had a lot of high hopes. People in Tennessee really liked him and were disappointed he left, but understood he was going to take a head coaching job. So number 32 on my list, I think we might have the same team.
Probably.
Is that the Jets?
The Jets.
It's the Jets.
Back where they belong.
I will tell you this, Trevor Lawrence may have 5 interceptions already, but he didn't throw 4 in a game like our good friend Zach Wilson. You know what? Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, these are rookie quarterbacks that got the start on bad teams. They're treating Justin Fields with kind of kid gloves in Chicago, just like, we don't really want to use him yet.
Yeah.
But in New York and Jacksonville, they're like, here you go. Those Wolves, go get them, kids. And they're, you got to be careful with that. And
so,
and Robert Saleh, I hope he's careful with that.
Well, here's my question, and it may be way, way, way too early to tell. Did the Jets make a mistake?
I think it's too early to tell, but he really does need to get better.
Because, yeah.
You just don't know until you get there. It's what I was saying yesterday. I hate when people are like, Trevor Lawrence has thrown 5 interceptions. He threw only 5 the entire year at Clemson. What do you expect? He's playing NFL teams. Like, let's stop comparing his college career to what he's doing today. It's not comparing apples to oranges. Those are still fruit. It's like comparing apples to like a tire on your car. Like, these are two totally different worlds you're living in terms of playing it. Zach Wilson is in the same boat, but you got to be better than four picks. There's something that you're not seeing right, and he's got to be trained better.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Rolling through this morning, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. Denver Broncos at 2-0 on the season. Yes, they beat the Giants. Yes, they beat Jacksonville. But is something brewing with the Broncos? Nick Ferguson joining us, former Broncos safety. He's also the co-host of the Nick and Cecil Show, 104.3, the Fan in the Mile High City. How are you, Nick?
I'm doing well, man. How about yourself?
Good. Thanks for joining us. As I said earlier, it's the Giants and the Jaguars. I get it. I mean, if people aren't that impressed, fine. But these are two road wins. What has been the most impressive thing about the Broncos in these two victories?
Well, for me, it is just the way they played team football. In years past under Vic Fangio, there was always some kind of stumble or, as you would say, waiting for the other shoe to drop. But this team has come together, and it has a lot to do, believe it or not, with one person, and that's Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, over the last two seasons, it was like, well, who's going to be the quarterback? And Drew Locke, you know, they gave him a chance last year. He really couldn't pull it out. And then you get a guy like Teddy Bridgewater to come in, and he's playing calm. He's not panicking inside the pocket. And watching him against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I get it, not even – pocket is going to be clean for quarterbacks, but he was under duress. He was able to slide and move in the pocket and make throws down the field. And he just got everyone here inspired who plays for the Broncos. Now, that's not to say that every Broncos fan is a Teddy Bridgewater fan, because they go back to the fact of what you mentioned earlier. It is the Jacksonville Jaguars. We're talking about the New York Giants. But I look at it like this. You win two games on the road, and that's hard to do in the NFL. And to me, winning games collectively as a team is something that you definitely want to do, and it can carry you far in a 17-game season.
When Teddy Bridgewater arrived, in terms of camp, was it an even quarterback battle between these two? Did Bridgewater lean as the favorite? What exactly was the dynamic between these two going into training camp?
Well, that all depends on who you ask that question, because I always felt that, you know, they called it 50-50, but Teddy was going to get the nod from the very beginning. Looking at how, when George Payton first arrived, what he decided to do as far as looking for an alternative at quarterback. He first looked at Matthew Stafford. That didn't fall through. And then there was mentions of Andy Dalton and a couple of other quarterbacks, which told me that the team wasn't really secure with Drew Locke. So when they finally settled on Teddy Bridgewater, I said, well, here's what we do know. Vic Fangio, he's under a lot of pressure. He needs to win. Pat Shurmur is looking to be a head coach, and the only way he can get back to that point is if he's with a team and an offense that could put up points. And then George Payton coming in and saying, well, listen, I have a guy that we drafted in the first round from Minnesota. I know what he can do. No, he's not Aaron Rodgers. But if you're looking for a guy that can keep the offense on schedule, he can execute, be efficient, keep the defense on the sideline, and keep them healthy and fresh, so they could come out and then get after opposing quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater was the guy. And then camp, as you watch things start to develop, you know, there were wild plays by Drew Locke, and we would go back and forth as media personnel as far as who won the day. I never looked at it that way. It was about which guy was leading the men in practice, because as a player, a guy who played in this league and coached in this league, I know you're going to make mistakes in practice, and that's what practice is for. It's about once you get into those games, do you have the confidence of your coaches and the players? And that's how Teddy won his job.
Cortland Sutton in a big game against the Jags. He's coming off that injury, that ACL in his knee. He's looking good. How much did that hurt them last year in the development of Drew Locke to not have that kind of receiver available?
Well, that was huge for the development of any young quarterback. And watching Cortland come out in training camp, we could all tell that he wasn't the same. That brace was something that was mentally weighing on him. And as a guy that had two knee surgeries, I understood what he was trying to battle through mentally, because it wasn't a physical part for him. And, you know, looking at the game against Jacksonville, all the shots that Teddy took down the field, and sudden end of the game with nine receptions for 159 yards. That tells you how this team wanted to go down the field explosively. But still, I mean, you take Sutton out of the equation. You still have Tim Patrick, who became a number one target for Drew Lock. You still had KJ Hamler and Jerry Jeudy. So there was really no excuse for Drew Lock at that time. But what Teddy is showing, with Jerry Jeudy out, you have to find another guy to be your outlet. And it was just kind of, you know, explosive players, explosive play for Courtland Sutton and Teddy Bridgewater.
So in terms of the defense, we know that the Broncos under Fangio were going to have a good defense. That's his MO. That's his kind of his thing. How good is it? I mean, how good is this defense compared to others around the league from what you're noticing so far?
Well, you know what? We don't know exactly how well they are at the very beginning because this is too early in the process. If this is a 17, you know, week season and things change from week to week, you know this. All it takes is one injury, and that just kind of throws a kibosh in every single thing. Like Bradley Chubb, he went out again. He injured his ankle again. Will he play this week against the Jets? We don't know. Probably doubtful. But when you look at the defense collectively on all three levels, they have some players. And, you know, the Broncos sustained a couple of injuries. Josie Jewell hurt his shoulder making a special teams tackle. I mentioned Bradley Chubb. So the Broncos have to find ways to overcome that. But the greatest thing about what George Payton has assembled for Vic Fangio is the secondary. We watched Pat Surtain actually grow up. He gave up a big play in the game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Then he came back and gave the ball back to the offense with a sensational interception to keep both feet in. This is the type of talent that they have, but it goes back to the idea if they can stay together and stay healthy, then they could end up being one of those top five defenses at the end of the year.
You mentioned George Payton. He comes in as the general manager. How does that work with John Elway? What is John Elway's responsibility? I know he's his boss, but how much conversation those two have about this team and how it's put together?
Well, right now, this is George's team. I mean, at the early part of the draft process, John Elway was involved. To what magnitude, I don't know, but I know he was somewhat in the room. But, you know, John had his opportunity. And Payton is not here if John succeeds the way they thought he was going to. He had a nice run. There's nothing negative I could even say about John. But sometimes it's all about progressing and moving forward. And with the ownership situation kind of up in the air and then not knowing what you're going to do as a quarterback and Vic Fangio in his 2 years here, having gone over 500, they needed to make, you know, a change, a household change. You and I go through the same thing. You know, throughout the year, we kind of clutter our house with things, but then during the springtime, there's this purge that we have to make. So the Broncos organization felt as though they had to make a purge, and John Elway was part of it. But we're seeing the fruits of the labor right now for George Payton and Vic Fangio. I know it's early once again, but they're doing something that Vic Fangio could not do in his first 2 years here, and that was win two games in September. So they have the Jets coming up. They're trying to look to make it third game.
We're talking to Nick Ferguson. He's also the co-host, Nick and Cecil, on 104.3 The Fan, former Broncos safety. Large picture here with the Denver fan base, and I know they're as passionate as anybody in the country. How hard was it for them when, yeah, it's great when Peyton Manning's here, and it's great when we're going to Super Bowls and winning Super Bowls, but all of those years that they could not find a quarterback and all of those draft picks that didn't work out, you're not just criticizing a guy that's at the top. You're criticizing the king of football in that area. How hard was it to have that sort of balance between a legend and a guy that was not creating the best situation for the football team?
That was the biggest challenge here in Denver because you go around town and you talk to different fans, and they remember all the great things that John Elway did, the back-to-back Super Bowls, bringing Peyton Manning here, which attracted all the other key pieces to making that run of Super Bowl 50. But then there are others who remember Super Bowl 50 and say, hey, listen, that was kind of the defense that pretty much did that. And after Peyton Manning, nothing really happened. And you look at, you know, Brock Osweiler, Paxton Lynch, you know, you didn't hit on those guys. And Drew Lock was the lone survivor of John Elway's picks at the quarterback position. That's why so many fans were rooting for Drew Lock to succeed over Teddy Bridgewater because he was like Luke Skywalker for this Broncos fan base and John Elway. He was their last hope. And when he didn't surpass Teddy Bridgewater, it was just like, now John is gone. You're probably going to have new ownership come 2022, and Drew Locke is not going to be the future of the Broncos organization because there's a possibility that the Broncos draft a young quarterback next year, which is going to put Drew Locke's future with the team in jeopardy. So it was a lot of confusion. Fans had to draw lines in the sand. But when you really think about it, it's about, I mean, we know what this organization used to be. I played for Mr. B and Mike Shanahan when, you know, it was part of the standard. John Elway helped set that standard. But along the way, things were lost because not focusing on the most important things for the team. And I truly feel like this, you know, I can't really prove this, but I feel this way. John failed by trying to find a quarterback for this team because he kept trying to find himself.
Yeah.
They may have been big. They may have had the arm talent. But the one thing they lack is the work ethic. And that's probably been his biggest fault.
We got an explanation once that it's so hard for former players to evaluate their own position. Like, you were a safety. Do you feel like you would be better if you were to evaluate talent? Are you better at evaluating safeties or are you better evaluating wide receivers that you covered?
I would say, you know, at this point, I would say both. But because once again, you have to take yourself out of the equation and you have to say, well, what is the best thing for the team? You can't say, well, hey, this is what I would have done in this particular situation. This guy should have done this. You can't do that because they are not you. They don't look at the game the same way that you do. So
right.
You look at the scheme that you're running and you say, okay, well, which guy out there fits what we're trying to do? He may not play the way that I played it. He may not play the way that Champ Bailey or John Lynch played, the guys who I played with. We just need one guy to go in and do what we're asking him to do. If you can separate those two, you can be successful.
That's awesome. Nick, great stuff. Really appreciate it. All the best to those everybody at The Fan, including Cecil, your co-host on the Nick and Cecil Show, 104.3 The Fan in Denver. Again, former Broncos safety Nick Ferguson joining us, helping us with this 2-0 team that's a little bit of a buzz now. Appreciate it, Nick.
Appreciate it, man.
You got it. Nick Ferguson, again, on our Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at progressive.com. We'll continue along and wrap up this hour. Get you ready for Denton Day on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we wrap up this hour on Wake Up Call. Get you set for Denton Day coming up next. This hour, Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage that fits your life, Rocket can. I like his answer. We were just talking to Nick Ferguson, safety, and I think we stumbled on a gold explanation to John Elway's inability to find a quarterback from Jason Cole. I don't know how long ago was that, probably a year ago
coming up
when we hit him with that
sometime last fall.
I think it was last fall because Jason Cole wrote a book about Elway and,
yep.
You know, we just were chatting with about the NFL and I told him and I said, you know, what do you make of his inability to do this? Like he's the list is huge. It's not like he missed on two guys. He's missed
right.
on 8 or 9 guys that have tried to land the coveted job and just nothing has worked.
And can we say that he was the catalyst for Manning? I mean, do we give him credit for that or is it that kind of worked out and fell into his lap?
I think he had some selling point, but
right,
I think,
but it wasn't like he was evaluating talent.
No. You're right. He didn't pluck Manning and go, oh, I'll resurrect his. Like, yes, a neck injury, but there were plenty of teams that were willing to take a gamble on that.
In fact, team thought they had him for sure.
I tell that story all the time. One prominent media guy put out, there was a press conference and everything, and people went, oh, the Manning's going to sign with the Titans, and that didn't happen. But we asked Jason Cole, like, what do you make of this? Doesn't it feel weird? He's one of the best quarterbacks of all time, yet he can't pick. And Jason Cole said, that's not his area of expertise.
Yeah.
His expertise is defense. That is all he's ever studied. He doesn't study the other quarterback. He's not going up against the other quarterback. He studies the defense. So he knows linebackers. He knows defensive ends. He knows safeties. He knows corners. He knows defense. He knows how that is supposed to be played. He knows how to dissect that better than anything. So when it was time to put a defense together, that was in his wheelhouse, right? And he was probably handicapped by the idea of finding him, right? What he does and what he can do, which is impossible. So again, that's kind of where Nick Ferguson was going. Yes, he could evaluate, safeties, but the guys he's covering, like, would you, if you're a safety and you're watching film of a wide receiver, wouldn't you take notice of things, how a guy cuts, how a guy, fakes out? You would be more inclined to see those things than a safety playing a position you play.
Which, at the time, even when Jason Cole told us that, it was something that seemed like it should be common knowledge.
Right.
But it was so mind-blowing at the same time.
It's like,
wait, what?
I never really connected it like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. That seems like, yes, of course, we should have been thinking of that way all along, but we don't.
We don't. Just imagine how many hours John Elway has been in film rooms studying defenses.
Yeah.
It's almost incalculable how many hours he has spent looking over defensive film. Right? And then you start when you realize that it does make sense that he's not evaluating the right things from a quarterback perspective, because in his entire career, he has never been asked to do that.
No, and he's probably trying to find himself.
Right. That's exactly right.
Which you can't do.
Denton Day coming up next. It's Tony D, Ron Culver. Thanks for joining us. Be back tomorrow. Sports Map Radio.